I signed the grant letter with my full legal name, and the money vanished the same day. Not stolen, not lost, not even misdirected, the way accountants soften disasters. It vanished the way a coin vanishes in a magician's palm, clean, practiced, and somehow still polite. I watched the confirmation email arrive, watched the receipt populate with a cheerful tax sentence, watched our campaign dashboard tick upward like a heartbeat. Then I refreshed again and saw a different organization's logo where ours had been. At first I assumed it was a browser glitch, a cached page, an old tab, anything but what it felt like, a hand adjusting the world 1 centimeter to the left. I clicked through the donation trail the way people pick at a scab, half hoping for pain because pain would mean it was real. The funds had settled into an entity I'd never heard of, then another, then another. Each step came with its own seal, its own mission statement, its own smiling stock photo of hands stacked together. So many hands, so much warmth, so much permission. And in every document, in every tidy paragraph of compliance language, my signature waited for me like a witness who wouldn't stop staring. I didn't start this because I wanted influence. I started because I wanted something simpler than influence. Proof. My sister used to say I needed receipts for my faith in people. She meant it as a joke. I took it as a diagnosis. So when I left my job in corporate fundraising and joined Brightwell Relief, a mid-sized local charity with an unglamorous mission, housing support, food distribution, job placement, I felt like I'd finally stepped into a world where the numbers meant something clean. Brightwell wasn't sexy. No galas with crystal centerpieces. No celebrity endorsements. Just a warehouse, a few battered vans, a staff that ran on coffee and stubbornness, the kind of place that made a person believe in work again. My first week, the director, Leela, handed me a binder thick with grant opportunities and said, "Build us a pipeline that doesn't depend on desperation." That was the hook. Not money, dignity. I built the campaign like a machine. Corporate matching, micro-donations. A monthly giving circle with a name that sounded sincere without being corny. I used my old contacts, but I didn't use my old habits. No pressure. No guilt. Just clarity. Here's the need. Here's the impact. Here's the receipt for belief. It worked. Within 3 months, we were seeing donations that made the warehouse feel less like a stopgap and more like an engine. People sent notes with their contributions, tiny confessions of their own. I was help once. I want this to exist. Please keep going. Then, in late October, we got an email from someone named Ethan Merrow. He didn't use a title in his signature. No vice president of philanthropy. No founder. Just his name, a phone number, and a link to a website that looked like it had been designed to be trusted. White space, muted colors, a mission statement that promised efficient, modern giving. He wrote that he'd followed Brightwell's work and wanted to discuss philanthropic infrastructure. That phrase, philanthropic infrastructure, hit me wrong. It sounded like a parking garage. But Leela was excited. Our board had been pushing for scalability, and Ethan's email sounded like the kind of person boards love, someone who speaks in systems. I called him the next morning. His voice was warm without trying, measured, the kind of voice that makes a person sit up straighter. As if being heard properly is a privilege. He said he admired our ground truth. He said donors were hungry for transparency, and transparency required a clean pathway. Then he asked a question that felt like a compliment. Does Brightwell have a fiscal sponsor? I told him no. We were a registered nonprofit. We handled our own books. Of course, he said smoothly. Then this is about protection, not permission. Protection. Another hook. He explained it like he was describing a seatbelt. Donors could contribute through a giving partner that streamlined processing and reduced risk. It would widen our donor base, make corporate gifts easier, remove friction. There are donors, he said, who won't write directly to smaller organizations. Policy, internal controls. It's not personal, it's bureaucracy. Bureaucracy, I understood. Bureaucracy had shaped half my adult life. Ethan made it sound like we could outsmart it without breaking anything. He asked if I'd be open to a meeting with the partner organization. He didn't name them yet. He talked about it the way doctors talk about test results. There's a path forward, and it's responsible. Leela wanted me to take the lead. Our board chair, Anthony, emailed me a single line after I forwarded Ethan's message. Explore. Could be a game changer. The first meeting happened over video. Ethan joined from a room that looked like a hotel lobby. Soft lighting, tasteful art, nothing personal. Two other people joined. A woman named Raina who handled compliance, and a man named Miles who handled donor relations. They smiled in turns, like a practiced relay. Raina asked for our EIN and our last 2 years of financials. Normal. Miles asked about our impact metrics. Normal. Ethan said very little, and when he did, he used my name often, like he was fastening it to the conversation. Cam, this is solid work. The first time he said it, my chest warmed like I'd been given a clean bill of health. At the end of the call, Raina said, "We can set Brightwell up as a supported project under our network. It doesn't change your mission, it just changes the rails the money rides on." She shared her screen and showed me a flowchart. Brightwell at the bottom, donors at the top, in between, an organization called Harborlight Initiative. Harborlight had a real-looking website and an annual report that read like a corporate brochure. They listed partner projects that sounded plausible. Youth mentorship, veteran employment, disaster relief. Brightwell could be one more line item under their umbrella. Moz called it a boost. "It's credibility," Ethan said, lightly. "It's insulation, and it's speed." Speed was the word that sealed it. We were always slow, always waiting, always stretching. I asked about fees. Raina smiled like she'd been waiting for the question. Minimal administrative costs. Standard. Standard. Another soft word. She said it like it meant safe. They sent documents afterward, memorandums of understanding, processing agreements, a set of best practices for donor messaging. Everything was clean, tidy, and thick with language that made responsibility feel like paperwork. I read it all. Twice. I highlighted phrases. I took notes. I asked questions. Ethan answered quickly, always with the same tone. Calm certainty with room for my concerns. "When I hesitated," he said, "you're doing exactly what a careful person would do." I liked being a careful person. I liked it so much I didn't notice how badly I wanted his approval. 2 weeks later, we launched the new donation portal. The button on our website didn't say, "Donate to Brightwell" anymore. It said, "Donate via Harborlight." Nobody complained. Our numbers climbed. And for a while, that felt like proof. The first time I sensed something wrong, it didn't feel like a scandal. It felt like embarrassment. A longtime donor named Marianne called our office and asked why her receipt didn't mention Brightwell anywhere. I pulled up her transaction in the new system. Her donation had been processed, thanked, receipted, and categorized, neatly labeled under Community Stabilization Program. That sounded like us, vaguely, but it wasn't our program name. It was Harborlight's. I told Marianne it was a processing change. I used Raina's words, rails. Marianne made a small sound, not quite anger, more like confusion turning into distance. "I like giving to you," she said. "I know," I said, too quickly. "It's still us." But after I hung up, my office felt narrower. I emailed Miles. He replied within minutes. "Totally normal donor adjustment period. We can add Brightwell language in the donor acknowledgement email." I should have felt relieved. Instead, I felt like I'd been corrected in public and given a private pat on the head. Still, we added language. We tweaked the email template. Brightwell's name appeared as a supported project in smaller text beneath Harborlight's header. The next week, a corporate gift came through, one we never would have gotten before, 6 figures. Lita hugged me in the warehouse, laughing with wet eyes, and for a moment the discomfort in my chest shut up. That's what success does. It numbs doubt by turning it into gratitude. Then, the deposits started arriving late. Not catastrophically late. Not late enough to trigger alarm bells. Late enough to trigger a quiet sinking feeling every time payroll approached. I asked Raina about it. She told me about settlement cycles. She told me about internal review. She told me about risk mitigation. Every phrase was a pillow placed gently over my face. Ethan called me directly after my third email. "Cam," he said, and my name sounded like a hand on my shoulder. "I'm hearing stress. That makes sense. Let's zoom out. He talked about the bigger picture, about donor trust, about compliance, about how the world punishes organizations that move too fast and without protection. Then he said something that shifted the floor under my feet. "Parberlite isn't just a pass-through," he said. "They're a steward. A steward. Someone who holds. Someone who decides." I heard my own voice ask, "Decides what?" A pause, short enough to seem natural. "Decides timing," Ethan said. "Decides categorization. Nothing that impacts your mission. It's simply governance." Governance. Another clean word. The next morning, I logged into the portal and clicked deeper than I usually did. Past the donor list, past the receipt generator, into the back end where the system kept its quiet secrets. There were drop-down menus for allocation, not just to Brightwell, but to a dozen different partner projects. I stared at them like they were a row of doors in my house that I'd never noticed. The corporate gift, our six-figure miracle, was tabbed as General Relief, not Brightwell. "General," I called Miles. He gave me a bright, easy laugh. "That's just how it lands. General gives Harborlight flexibility." "Flexibility," I repeated. "Flexibility," he said, as if he was offering it like a gift. "It lets us respond to Mead across the network." "Across the network." "And Brightwell is in that network," he added quickly. "Which is why this is good." I wanted to argue, but arguing would mean admitting I'd been wrong to trust them. And I had built this. I had sold it. My fingerprints were on the button on our website. So I did what careful people do when they feel cornered. I looked for proof that would let me be right. Harborlight had an annual report. I downloaded it and searched for Brightwell. We were listed, small, in a section called Supported Initiatives. A single paragraph. A photo that wasn't ours. Then I searched Harborlight's IRS filings. I'm not an accountant, but I can read numbers. I can read the way money tells the truth when language is trying to be kind. Something didn't match. Their revenue was high. Their grants to partner organizations were odd. Not non-existent, not criminal on the surface, just smeared, distributed in a way that made it hard to see who got what and when. It looked like fog made out of spreadsheets. And then I found the second organization. Not in the filings. Not directly. In a contract addendum. A footnote that referenced processing services provided by an entity called Silverwell Community Fund. Silverwell had its own website. It looked even cleaner than Harborlight's. Almost sterile. No staff photos. No stories. Just the same vocabulary. Stewardship, infrastructure, efficiency. I searched Silverwell's registration. It existed. Barely. A mailbox, I guess. A board that seemed to rotate names like a shell game. My throat tightened in a way that felt physical, like my body was trying to swallow a warning. I called Ethan. He answered on the second ring. "I found Silverwell," I said. A pause again, this one slightly longer. "Of course," he said gently. "That's simply a vendor relationship." "A vendor that's also a non-profit," I said. "Many are," he replied, calm as a nurse. "It allows for streamlined compliance." My mind kept trying to turn it into something harmless. A technicality. A tax thing. The modern solution. Then, Ethan said, softly, "Cam, there's a line between diligence and suspicion. One builds trust, the other can damage it." The word damage landed like a threat. In a silk wrapper. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't need to. Because I heard what he meant, I could become a problem. And problems don't get protected. Problems get managed. That night I stayed late in the office with the lights off, staring at the glow of my laptop screen like it was a confession booth. I pulled every report I could, every export, every timestamp. And in the middle of the data, I saw something that made my stomach go cold. A donation I recognized. Not Marianne. Not the corporate gift. A donation from my name. A test donation I'd made weeks ago when we launched. $50, just to see the receipt. In the system, it didn't say Brightwell. It said Silverwell. My own money had been flipped without my noticing. rerouted through a place that existed on paper and nowhere else. And the receipt had thanked me for supporting community resilience. That phrase meant nothing. Which is why it worked. I told myself there had to be an explanation, because the alternative made my skin feel too tight. I told myself this was complicated modern philanthropy. I told myself that I was reacting emotionally to a structural process I didn't understand. Then I opened the grant letter I'd signed, the one that had felt like a seatbelt. I read it again, slower, without letting my eyes skip over the comfortable words. And there it was. Not hidden, not encrypted, just written in a way that made it easy to ignore. Bitewell, as a supported project, did not own donations processed through Harborlight. Harborlight retained discretion. Harborlight could reallocate. Harborlight could delay. Harborlight could determine best use. In other words, people weren't donating to us. They were donating to a story that used us as a prop. I sat very still as the realization took shape. This wasn't theft in the simple sense. This was something worse, because it wore the mask of legitimacy. Donations weren't disappearing, they were being laundered into righteousness. Every reroute was a moral rinse cycle, and I had helped build the chute. I called Lila first. I tried to sound normal, but my voice didn't belong to me anymore. "I think the funds are being rerouted," I said. She laughed once, sharp and disbelieving, then stopped when she heard the way I wasn't laughing with her. "What do you mean rerouted?" she asked, and her voice went thin. I explained it carefully, too carefully, like I could soften the blow by using proper nouns. Harborlight, Silverwell, allocation, discretion. When I finished, Leela didn't speak for a long time. Then she said, very quietly, "How much?" I looked at the numbers again. I didn't want to. I did. I told her. The silence that followed had weight. It was the sound of a person realizing a year's worth of work had been turned into a performance for someone else's benefit. Leela said, "We have payroll next week." "I know," I said. "Cam," she said. And my name came out like something broken. What did we do? What did I do? I thought. Because the truth was, I had been the translator. I had been the bridge. I had carried Ethan's clean words into Brightwell and made them sound like salvation. I emailed Anthony, our board chair, with my findings. I attached documents, screenshots, exports. His reply came an hour later, and it was two sentences. "We need to be careful. Do not accuse anyone without counsel." Careful. The word that had always been my identity now felt like a collar. I tried counsel. I called a lawyer friend. He asked for our agreements. He asked who had introduced us to Harborlight. He asked if any board members had relationships with Ethan. I said no. I said I didn't know. My friend was silent for a moment, then said, "This is designed to be hard to prove." That sentence stayed with me, because it did something terrible. It explained the elegance. It explained the politeness. It explained why everything looked like compliance instead of crime. I called Ethan again. He answered like he'd been expecting it. "Cam," he said softly, as if greeting a worried patient. "I read the agreement," I said. "Yes," he replied. "The money isn't ours," I said. "Dumb," another pause. "The mission is," he said, smoothly. "That's the point." I felt my body tilt forward, like I might vomit. "People donated to Brightwell," I said. "They thought..." "They donated to Impact," he interrupted, still gentle. "Brightwell is Impact." "No," I said, and my voice surprised me with its steadiness. "Brightwell is a place. Brightwell is rent paid, food bought, salaries, vans that start in the winter. Brightwell is not a word." He let me finish. He always let me finish. That's what made him feel reasonable. Then he said, "Cam, there's an issue here. Not with Harborlight. With expectations." My hands were shaking. I pressed my palm against the desk to steady it. "Who are you?" I asked. A soft laugh. Not cruel. Almost affectionate. "Someone who keeps things moving," he said. "Someone who understands the system." I heard myself say, "Silverwell is a shell." He didn't deny it. Denial would have been clumsy. Instead, he said, "Silverwell is a vehicle." Vehicle. Like it could be neutral. like it could be used for good or bad, depending on the driver. What happens now? I asked. Ethan exhaled, as if disappointed in me. What happens now, he said, depends on whether Brightwell wants to remain protected. Protected. There it was again. The seatbelt. The hook. I'm going to report this, I said. He went quiet long enough for the air to thicken. Then he said, Cam, please understand something. The story that donors believe is more fragile than the truth. If this becomes public, Brightwell might not survive the narrative. I felt a sharp, immediate anger. Not at him, at myself. Because part of me heard the logic and recognized how effectively it fit into my fears. I can't keep lying, I said. You don't have to lie, he replied. You have to choose what harms less. Choose. That word landed like a stamp. And in that moment, I understood the real flip. Not just the money, but the responsibility. The way he took the burden of wrongdoing and placed it into my hands like a heavy, warm object. If I spoke, I could destroy Brightwell. If I stayed silent, I became a collaborator. That was the design. My friend helped me draft a report. We sent it to the state charity regulator and the IRS. We documented timelines, names, entities, agreements, donor complaints, deposit delays. It felt righteous for about 30 minutes. Then my email access was revoked. Our donation portal went offline. The next morning, Brightwell's website displayed a plain white page with a single sentence. This project is currently under administrative review. No explanation. No contact. No timeline. Leela called me sobbing. Anthony stopped answering my emails. Staff texted me asking what was happening, and I couldn't give them anything that felt solid. Every answer I tried to form dissolved into legal language and shame. I drove to the warehouse and sat in my car in the parking lot, watching people inside move boxes the way they always did. Work is prayer. Work is proof. My chest hurt in a dull, steady way. I checked Harbor Light's website. Brightwell's name was gone from the list of supported initiatives. Not crossed out. Not archived. Gone as if it had never existed. Silverwell's website, however, had a new banner announcing a community resilience initiative with a glossy photo of hands stacked together. So many hands. So much warmth. So much permission. I thought about Marianne and her confused voice. I thought about the corporate gift. I thought about my $50 test donation, my own name printed on a receipt that thanked me for supporting nothing. And I realized, slowly, with a sick, clean clarity, that the moment of disappearance hadn't happened when the money moved. It had happened when my carefulness became a tool. When my diligence became a seal of legitimacy. When I translated their language into trust. I sat there until my phone battery died, holding the dead weight of it in my hands. And I couldn't tell where the system ended and where I began. Because the paperwork still had my signature. And the world still looked polite.